friends, it's time for the second hour of the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. Welcome back, Mrs. Future.
Thank you.
Welcome back, Bobby.
Yeah.
And I'd like to present you with our special guest today, somebody who needs no introduction for many of you. You've heard him on the air here at KSCO and on Coast to Coast many times, pharmacist Ben Fuchs. He's a nutritional pharmacist from Boulder, Colorado. He specializes in using nutritional supplements instead of more toxic pharmaceutical drugs. He looks at the body as a healing, self-regenerating system designed divinely to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. What a description, Ben.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
I think that's right off of your website there.
Oh, that's right. I thought that's
a regenerative system.
Huh. It is. It regenerates, and that's so important because we feel like we are condemned to the body that we have, and that's just kind of like a poster child of vision we have, the incorrect and the ignorance we have over what is most intimate to us in our lives, and that is our human body. Like Al, son, yeah. Bobby. Hi, Bobby, by the way. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Ben. Yeah, great to hear you.
Yeah. Al, where's your pancreas? Point to your pancreas.
On the left.
Yeah, but I'm teasing a little bit. But you're a smart guy. You're one of the smartest guys I've ever met in my life. And we just don't understand the things about our bodies. We know more about our microwave ovens than we do about our bodies.
Yeah. That's a good point,
You know, we can program our computers more than we can program our bodies. And what ends up happening is we fall prey to manipulative, predatory, nefarious forces who bleed green. We bleed red, but these nefarious forces bleed green.
You mean the profit motive?
Yes, the corporate model. And I'm a capitalist, so I don't want to go off on capitalists necessarily, but when it comes to how we take care of our bodies, our ignorance is preyed upon by those who, by law, really have to address their fiduciary obligations to their shareholders and to financial interests that aren't ours. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they get away with it is because we don't understand how the whole thing works. And not only, Alan, son, and Bobby, not only do we not understand, we're intimidated. We're scared of it. We're scared to dive into it. Oh, it's too much. I can't figure it out.
So you're saying, like, I've heard that Big Pharma has a lot of special interest groups in Washington, for example.
My God. It's one of the biggest lobbies, and not just Big Pharma, insurance companies and hospital companies and HMOs. And they're probably the largest lobbying group. If they're not the largest, they're in the top two or three lobbying groups in Washington. And their interest is not with us. And in a way, it's a manifestation of the adversarial relationship that we've built into our culture between government and citizen, police and cops and robbers, bosses and employees, consumers and business people, buyers and sellers. Everywhere you look, there are these adversarial relationships. And the theory is, the philosophy is that the best good will come out of whatever kinds of adversarial relationships there are. The greatest good will be developed out of that. And that gets into the philosophy of government, the philosophy of politics, et cetera. But in terms of our health, it is extra insidious. Because it's one thing if you're talking about an adversarial relationship between the taxpayer, the government and the taxpayer. Yeah, it can cost you some money. But when it comes to how we handle our bodies, how we handle our diseases and our illness, and how we maintain our health, this adversarial relationship can not help but result in shortened longevity, in a poorer quality of life, and most insidiously and sneakily, a reliance on outside authority to handle what should be our personal business.
So that's big, and that's right there. That's that.
It's huge.
Turn over your body to the medical system.
Yes, that's what's happening here. And because we've been programmed, many of us, from cradle to grave, to rely on this outside authority, to marginalize the human body, to buy in to the basic philosophy of medicine. And medicine has a philosophy. There's a philosophy of medicine. The basic philosophy of medicine that says the body is doomed, that it breaks down, that diseases are inevitable, they're incurable, and all that we can do is stave off our ultimate demise with medications and surgical procedures and preventive measures that are really anathema to the body. This I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even know what to call it because I don't want to bring it.
I heard people call it facetiously cutting, burning, and poisoning.
Well, you know, that's a very good point. Check this out. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. You have your body. When we look at the human body, looks are deceiving. We see the body as kind of this homogenous structure where everything is integrated and coordinated. Yeah. And we don't see it at its basic components, at its basic building blocks, which is the cell and the stuff that surrounds the cell. Collectively, it's referred to as the matrisome, which is basically the matrix with the cell in between it, at the center of it. Mm. So a cell and then surrounded by a matrix, and that matrisome is the fundamental unit of life. The only thing the medical model can do to that matrisome is excise it, radiate it, or poison it. Oh, and electrocute it.
Could you define those words?
Surgery is cutting, right?
That's all it can do. Pharmaceuticals are poison. Here's the point, in this model. Yes, pharmaceuticals are poison. Ablation is electrocution. X-rays are radiation. Yeah. And surgical removal.
So kill it and get rid of it.
That's the only thing it can do.
And so the medical model is really good at identifying what's wrong, but not at all talking about what's right.
No, it's listen to the point I'm making here, okay? Kill. That point is dramatic, and you guys jumped all over it because it is so dramatic. But here's the major point. A cell does need to be excised or radiated or electrocuted. It needs to be fed, it needs to be oxygenated, and it needs a clean place to do its business. And ladies and gentlemen, that's it. There's only three things a cell needs. And in the medical model's magical bag of tricks, there is nothing that can feed a cell, oxygenate a cell, or provide a clean place for that cell to do its work. That is the job of our lifestyle. That is all based in how we live our lives, the foods we eat, the supplements we take, how we breathe and how we respirate and how we move our bodies, and the toxicity we don't put into our systems. And to me, to rely on an outside force when we have not exhausted all of our possibilities, all of the ways that we can address a cell from the or a matrisome, that whole complex, from the comfort of our own bathrooms, bedrooms, living rooms, and kitchens, and to be encouraged to rely on outside forces before we rely on these things that we can handle on our own is evil with a capital E. But here's the real problem, guys. There's a phenomenon called the Stockholm Syndrome, right?
You like being a prisoner.
You like your prisoner, your captor. You like your abuser. You fall in love with your abuser. We have fallen in love with our abusers.
Yeah, there are good qualities about some drugs, you know.
Well, you know, mind expanding, and there's drugs and there's drugs, and you have to kind of weed them out.
Yeah, that's right.
And I also want to be very clear here. I am not ripping on individual doctors. I have many friends who are physicians. Yeah. And they're, for the most part, the ones that aren't on TV speaking for the government or speaking for as spokespeople for the drug companies. Those people, I don't even want to talk about those people. But the average physician has gone into the business to alleviate suffering. They're good people. It's the philosophy. It's the paradigm. It's the model that needs to be changed. You see the distinction I'm making? It's not about the individuals.
It's more fundamental than that. It's the whole medical model itself, the way education
is. It goes back to the education system in a way.
It really does.
Yeah. It really does. Everything really does boil down to
Well, let's look at in an ideal world what a proper education system would be on this topic, okay?
That's great.
We'll be right back right after the break. We're talking to pharmacist Ben Fuchs. It's the Dr. and Mrs. Future Show with Bobby Wilder.
Yeah.
Hey, folks, welcome back to the show. We're talking with pharmacist Ben Fuchs, and Ben has pointed out to us a number of the issues with our medical system and how it works, and I wanted to get to how he would change it. Like, what kind of education system would you institute, like understanding anatomy junior high? Or
understanding the sciences, the hard sciences, not in an education way, but in a love way.
Ah.
In a love way.
Well, you love your body.
In an love the cell, love the chemistry.
Oh.
To have children appreciate how, there's no other word except for magical the body is. Mm-hmm. It's the only way it can express it, how it's intelligent it is, how responsive it is,
yeah.
how it builds back stronger after it's under duress. The bone is stronger at the point of the break. The amazingness that is right under our nose, the miraculous nature of the intelligence of a cell that is somehow able to coordinate hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of different chemical reactions every split second and have them coordinated in this way that everything is operating in this perfectly harmonious, regulated, tightly choreographed, parallel processing system at the nano scale, at the atomic, at the quantum scale.
So we're giving this hugely advanced technology at our disposal.
If you're a science fiction writer, you could not come up with this. This is a technology not from the future, but from another dimension, from another existence. The technology that's behind the cell, not the body, the cell. The cell is nanoscopic.
It's
the
amazing.
It's so amazing. And you know, Dr. Future, we look at the cell, we think of the cell. Our images, our mind's eye goes to the circle on the blackboard, you know, with the stuff inside it.
Yeah.
That's not what a cell is. It's a blob, a microscopic blob. Please get this. It's a microscopic blob that within it has embedded hundreds of thousands of substructures embedded perfectly in just the right angle and just the right space, and these substructures are constantly deconstructing and reconstructing.
Yeah, it's like you're in some kind of a city almost, you know. You're
beyond a city.
Yeah.
There's no city on earth that's like this, and it's emitting light and colors, and it's a blob. It's a microscopic. Am I the only one that is floored by this?
You're definitely an evangelist for loving your inner blob.
No, we've had Bruce Lipton on, who's also quite fascinated with cellular intelligence.
Yes. If the intelligence in it is the information processing ability, the data that it can store and that it can process and that it can work with, and the responsiveness it has to that information is beyond our comprehension, but it's not beyond our ability to be in awe of it. So to answer your question, we have to restore this sense of awe to what we are, and by extension to what reality is, what nature is, what all of the things that are in the world are. And we don't do that. We teach children to be factory workers.
Yeah, it's a remnant of the 19th century in a way.
No, it's a remnant of the 16th century.
It's a
remnant of the Prussian model. It's called the Prussian model.
So it can be traced back to the 16th century.
It can be traced to Prussia. Martin Luther, it was designed to teach children to enter into the religion. Where you have the guy in the front. Look at the model that we take for granted. We don't even look at it. You have the guy in the front or the lady in the front, and she talks to a bunch of children. They don't talk back. They listen and they take notes, and they just respect her. They don't answer any questions, or they don't ask any questions. They're not encouraged to learn how to ask or learn how to think. They're encouraged just to take that information and suck it up like a sponge.
Yeah.
And when they leave, they don't know how to think. And you know what, Alan, Son, and Bobby? If we have one big problem in this culture, it's our inability to critically think.
Mm.
We do not know how to process information.
So no classes on that either? Nothing?
Well, they don't want you critically thinking. You're a troublemaker.
Yeah,
you get drugged. You get Ritalin. You get ADD drugs if you critically think, if you ask questions. So we have a culture that unless it changes from the ground up, as you astutely pointed to, Dr. Future, from the education of the children upwards, it is doomed. It cannot continue this way, and it's breaking down at an accelerated pace. Now, I believe that in order to make an omelet, you got to break a couple eggs, right?
Yeah.
So we're building an omelet here, and you know, I'll be damned if we're not breaking a couple eggs on the way.
Well, do we have any examples, you know, of other cultures that have done better with, like what about the nationalized healthcare cultures?
Like in the northern countries, that's where the medical model is, or in the Nordic countries, that's where the medical model is especially entrenched.
Oh, in a sense, socialized medicine is actually the worst in that sense because it entrenches old ideas.
Yes. Institutions are designed to stay static. The word institution comes from static, stasis. It's designed not to die. You understand what I'm saying? The institution of medicine is designed to perpetuate itself, as all institutions are. Mm. And there's always going to be a battle, an adversarial relationship, if you will, between the institution and the individual. And this is what we're experiencing. But because of programming and our inability to critically think and laziness, mental laziness and survival and all of the accoutrements of our modern 21st century culture, we have come to deify, to lionize our oppressors. And that's what we're experiencing here today. And there's probably people listening to this program right now that think that I'm crazy.
Well, and I think a lot of people are crazy. You know, I mean, why is the media so focused, for example, on everyone getting the vaccine right now?
Red flag right there, right? When does the media ever have a consensus on anything, right? Yeah. When is there ever a consensus on anything scientific? And I love this idea of trust the science, follow the science. Like, you're not a scientist if you question. And now they're saying, how dare they question? We got to make it mandatory because people aren't buying into it. Now it's going to be mandatory.
Yeah, I heard it's like 50% of the culture has a red flag on this.
Because people smell a rat.
Yeah.
And they're not lucid enough. They're not educated enough. Now, here's the thing. They're not lucid or educated enough to know what exactly the rat is.
Yeah.
So when you question, they don't sound intelligent sometimes because they haven't really thought out, but they know enough to know that there's a rat.
Something's not right in Denmark.
Something is not right.
Not right.
Okay?
Yeah.
So they have these people and they interview them and they say, well, I don't like the government, blah, blah, blah. And they make them sound stupid, right? And they lump everybody into it and then they politicize it. So you're a Republican if you think this, and you're a Democrat if you think that, and you're a Trumper if you think this, and you're like Biden if you think that. And it has nothing to do with any of that. That is infantilizing the subject, which is extremely important. Are you going to have a substance injected into your blood that has never been injected into human blood before and on a mass level that is made up of substances that we have no idea about? In other words, the substances that are in this injection, if you will, come from in factories that are making the substances in large amounts, not just the genetic material, the coating to the genetic material. This is made of a witch's brew of chemicals that come from an industrial factory that nobody has any way of regulating or monitoring.
So are you saying that we're not using informed consent?
What do you think? You think it's informed consent? People just buy into it.
Well,
now you have mandatory.
Yeah, it's contingent. You can't get your job unless
you can't get a job in Europe.
Can't
you can't
travel.
Go shopping. You can't go to a restaurant. You can't go to a bar. Right. You can't live your life. You can't fly. You can't go on a plane. It's just beginning.
So you're suggesting that coercion and enticement is not the same as informed consent?
Of course not.
Miss
of course not. Of course not. There's no informed consent because people are not informed.
Yes. Yeah, that's
They're
true.
Not informed. There's no information. You know how many times I've been censored on YouTube? I'm not even that radical. I've been censored multiple times. What's with all the censorship all of a sudden? Not all of a sudden, but now it's like out in the open. Now it's blatant. We have to control misinformation. Misinformation.
Yeah.
The 12 deadly doctors who are
the
12 for killing
the disinfo dozen, I think they're known as.
Yes.
Right? Really? Come on, Mercola, Tenpenny. These people are brilliant observers of science and of medicine and of health. And they're the disinformation dozen. But you see, you and I and Bobby and Son and probably many of your listeners, we're talking to each other. We're in an echo chamber. We're not communicating to the masses of people. The masses of people, they weren't even going to listen to this. And if they did, they would just think that we're just talking gibberish because the idiocracy is so deep and it starts from the ground up that I don't see a way out.
They'll just use the authority. So you, those guys, you're talking pseudoscience.
Pseudoscience, right.
Well, and the way out is through because the pendulum will always swing the other direction because of the inherent nature of humanity is to always start where you're at and then go someplace different.
Well, I hope there's a pendulum, but one of the missions, one of the mandates of the centralized control system is to prevent pendulums. Do you understand? It's not in the system's interest to have a pendulum.
Well,
pendulums are in genetic interest. It's in our evolutionary interest to have pendulums.
But it's
not in the system's interest.
So what's in the system's interest? Just to make more money?
To maintain the status quo, to not change the power structure that has been in place, the oligarchs and the plutocrats and the people who own everything.
Well, once you're in power, you'd spend a lot to maintain your power.
Do you want to lose it if you're in power?
Right.
No, of course not. And in fairness, much of the alternatives to the power is a Hobbesian nightmare.
Yeah.
you know, it's pitchforks and storming the Bastille. And unfortunately, the battle has been presented as between the ignorant and the powerful. And that's unfortunate because there's stuff people in between who are neither ignorant or powerful who are getting screwed over by this positioning.
That is a brilliant point, Ben. Yes. You know, we have a break coming up, and we have a couple of
callers.
We
got some callers. You ready to take some calls, Ben?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Good. So we got 30 seconds before the break. Let's just say hello to Andre in Hollister. And Andre, you've got about 30 seconds, and then we're going to a break, and then we'll be answering when you get back. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you, guys. If there's no informed consent, does that break the Nuremberg Code? And if it does, what is the punishment for that? I've heard it was hanging.
Those are good questions, too. All right. Yeah. Well, let's ponder that while we go.
I like to hope we're a kindler, gentler new paradigm here.
Yes. Let's listen to some advertising and some evidence that our economy still works with a lot of free will and participation. Be right back.
Appropriate brainwashing, Mike. Okay, welcome back to the show. I do believe our caller is still on the line, Mrs. Future.
We're talking
to pharmacist Ben Fuchs.
Andreas from Hollister.
Hey, Andreas,
thank you very much.
Yeah. Yes. Do you have a question for Ben?
Yeah, I've been hearing that this lack of an informed consent and pushing the vaccine and other and blocking, not just pushing the vaccine.
Hold on.
What's that?
You're kind of dropping in and out a little bit.
The hydroxychloroquine and a few other things out there that could have helped.
Yeah,
they were
made
illegal during the height of this.
Therapeutics, the non-vaccine therapeutic.
The story behind that story would be, I'm sure Ben's got something to say about that.
And withholding information about health, promoting good health to avoid dying from this disease. All this.
And the absolute lack of discussion about natural immunity and giving the credit to any immunity at all to the idea that vaccinations helped.
So if this stuff violates the Nuremberg Code, and I don't know if we're signatories to that or if it was just a worldwide agreement, verbal agreement to say never again, we won't do experiments on humans like the Germans did in World War II. But I've been hearing that this breaks the Nuremberg Code and that the violation, if you do violate it, the punishment for that would be death. Back then, I heard that they not just hung the scientists that were involved in the human experiments, but also the media that was in charge of covering it up. That would start from the local level, our very own Gail Newell, up to Fauci.
Well, let's talk to Ben and let's give Ben a chance to chime in on this subject.
The Nuremberg Code is about experimentation, right? And you can't even the hideousness of human experimentation by medicine. It's beyond even you don't even want to imagine it. What that means, you know, you ever see the experiments the Doctor of Death and the Nazis did?
Sure.
And we're not as dramatic here, but fluoride in the water and chlorine in the water. These are all experiments. These all began as experiments, and to call this latest intervention a vaccine denies the fact that it is not like an ordinary vaccine. Whether you call it a vaccine or not is up for debate. It's an experiment. And so if you want to bring up the Nuremberg Code, clearly this is a violation of the Nuremberg Code because this is an experiment. It has not even been approved by the FDA yet. It's still in an emergency release. It's just purely an experiment on humanity. Now, that's the Nuremberg Code issue. As far as informed consent goes, there can't really be informed consent. Informed consent implies that you're going to give people information about the consequences of the experiment or of the procedure. We don't know the consequences. You can't have informed consent because we don't know what's going to happen. This is a complete experiment that may not, and the results may not be in for decades. It may not
be
in
until... Do you think the repercussions of this could go past one generation? Are the effects of the mRNA?
We don't know. Yeah. We have no clue. We have no clue. This is uncharted territory in the name of preventing an illness that affects maybe 10% of people, 15% of people, the vast majority of whom don't even know they have it. Do you understand this? This is not a significant health issue in terms of numbers. And I'm not marginalizing the anecdotal stories or the incidences or the personal experiences people have. But this whole episode is so non-scientific in the sense that we don't have metrics on how much impact this is really having. So, for example, you hear 600,000 people died, right? Mm. We don't know how they died. We don't know if they died from the ventilator. We don't know if they died from the drugs. We don't know if they died from comorbidities. People are diagnosed or are given diagnosis of COVID on their death certificate if they're within 1 month of a diagnosis, a positive test. If you got hit by a car and you got diagnosed 1 month before or 30 days before, you're counted as a death. There are incentives for putting people in hospitals. Every patient that goes in the ICU gets the hospital gets a certain amount of money. Every patient that gets admitted to the hospital gets a certain amount of money. We don't know the impact of vitamin C deficiency. We don't know the impact of sugar. We don't know the impact of anything. There's no metrics here that are accurate. We don't know the deaths. We don't know the numbers.
No, is that deliberate?
We don't know about the PCR tests. We don't know even the positive tests there's questions about.
Okay. We got some more callers on this, but do you think that's intentional? Do you think that with the fact that it's so fuzzy?
You know, I think that there's a control agenda going on, and the fuzziness serves that control agenda's purposes. And the fact that we don't know how to critically think as a culture, we do not know how to critically think, plays right into it.
Yeah, and rule by fear.
Event 201 and what was the other one? Operation Lockstep. They were talking about something just like this a couple of years ago. So if you want to know what the big picture is, Georgia Guidestones, global depopulation, and they're all on board.
Right. I'm not I buy into that. I don't have a problem with that. I don't have any problem.
Okay. Let's keep going. We've
got some more callers, but thanks for calling.
And really appreciate your call, Andre.
It's really got it started here.
More to come. Let's say hello to Pure Heart. Hi, Pure Heart Naptos.
Hello, Dr. Mrs. Future. Hello, Ben.
Hello, Pure Heart.
There's really too much to go into because, you know, you can go on and on. But when I first heard about the deadly, scary latest iteration, Delta, whatever it was.
The Delta,
I set out to try to find the original stories about it and why it's a problem. And there's some lab somewhere doing nothing but nonstop sequencing. Anyway, so I found that it's in England, apparently, that they are, it's apparently the two amino acid difference. They did a forensic study of Scottish data, and they just read through it and said, oh, it looks like Uncle Angus reports his sister got sick. So let's say it is seems to be more infective, like 40% or so, they said. And then the part I liked the most about the report, like, if you have five or more comorbidities, your chances of being hospitalized from the new scary is doubled. Mm-hmm. Five comorbidities will double you. So anyway.
Even one comorbidity, obesity. I mean, just one comorbidity increases your risk. But that's the point I was making, is we don't have any accurate numbers anywhere. And by the way, there are people who say, my uncle was perfectly healthy. He ran every day and he had big muscles and he ate really good, but he died. We don't know how healthy people are.
And every single animal study using messenger RNA, all the animals died and the study was canceled. So I don't know. I believe that's true as well. So
that was the first
study that's being done on. So anyway,
absolutely,
it's the fear mongering is incredible, and that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Pure Heart raises a very interesting point. Let me check this out, guys. What he said is the fear mongering is incredible, but that's because his eyes are open. Do you understand? His eyes are open to this. For those people whose eyes are not open to this or whose ears are not open to this fear-mongering, it doesn't sound like fear-mongering. And so what you have is a situation where people whose eyes are open are having to explain what the reality looks like to people who are blind and don't know that they're blind via the Dunning-Kruger effect, which I'm sure you know what that is. And so we're those people who see the fear-mongering, it's so obvious, who see the consensus drumbeat of medical intervention and of promoting medical intervention, they're forced to explain it to people who don't. And unfortunately, there's way more people who don't see it than do.
Huh.
Yeah, well, nothing like it has nothing to do, by the way, propaganda campaign to put people on the same page, right?
And you guys, I should point this out. It has nothing to do with intelligence. It has to do with your eyes being open. You can have your eyes closed and be sleepwalking and be very smart.
Yeah, but there's a rational element for sure. But there's also some kind of almost religious element to this, where what's that all about? Why are people so adamant?
The proselytizing.
Yeah.
It is like a religion. And, you know, it's funny because in the old days, the religions would say things like, trust the priest. You got to listen to the priest, you know, and I'm not picking on any one religion, of course, but trust the clergy, if you will.
Yeah.
Now it's anybody who attacks me is attacking science. Trust the science. It's like science is the new religion.
It's out there. Trust in the outside force that's bigger than you.
Trust in the outside force. But this time it's science. If you replace God with science – if you replace the word God with science, you'd be back in the Middle Ages. You'd be back in the Dark Ages listening to the Pope or the priests.
Yes, science as a religion today.
Science as a religion, exactly.
All right, let's say hello to David in Capitola, okay? Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave.
Hello. Good to call in. Hey, quick comment before my question to the doctor. Out of approximate population of the Earth of 7.7 billion, they say, at least the media, of 4 million have passed away due to COVID. That's less than 0.005%. So it doesn't seem like a real big thing to me. I have a question for you. I got COVID the end of March and went through it fine. In fact, I'd rather have COVID than the flu that I've gone through many times.
It wasn't that bad then. How do you know it was COVID? Did you actually get a test?
Oh, yeah, I got a rapid test, and it came back positive within just a couple minutes, actually. And, yeah, I was sick of quarantine. But my question is, now, I had to get a COVID vaccination because at my workplace, I have to wear a mask. And I was able to not wear a mask if I got a COVID test, but now the rules have changed. So now, even though I got the COVID vaccination, I have to wear the mask. But my question to you, doctor, is, now, I can sell my convalescent plasma because I had COVID and they ship it overseas to Europe or what have you.
But they're not using it here?
Why did I get... Huh. And I guess they do use it here too. But my question is, well, if I have this, I don't know, this special immunity or what have you, why did I have to get this vaccination?
As well.
Keep your job, obviously.
Yeah, that's why. from a health perspective, obviously, the best immunity going is to have the infection. And we know people are getting...
It's called natural immunity, and nobody is giving it any credit.
Yeah, but Ben, have you ever heard of someone getting sick and then still taking the vaccine for it? I mean, is that?
Yes, yes.
They do it all the time.
Absolutely. That's what I'm telling you. There's no critical thinking here. There's no examination of what's happening. But the problem is, as I said a moment ago, those who see it have to communicate with those who don't see it.
Who don't want to communicate unless it's about whether you're on the same team.
I didn't want to get this.
You have a job, you know. You have to have your living. You have to live. You have to travel. I may have to get this vaccine, by the way. I may have to get it.
I know
what they're doing. I understand what it is, but I have to go to Europe. You know, what am I going to do?
Right.
I have my business in Europe. So, you know.
So which one are you going to get?
No, I think, you know, I was wondering if you could just get a tetanus vaccine because the idea that the mRNA doesn't sterilize for the vaccine, according to the inventor of the mRNA gene therapy treatment, and that the only thing that the vaccine would do and is supposed to do is stimulate your T3, T1 cellular response and stimulate your immunity.
Yeah.
Couldn't you just do that with a known vaccine like a tetanus shot?
It's the mRNA is specific, supposedly, against a part of the spike protein.
The point is it still doesn't sterilize for the virus. It actually is described very well by Robert Malone in his testimony for the Crimes Against Humanity deposition. And he says that the mRNA gene therapy has been called a vaccine because you can use it to stimulate the immune system. However, it isn't really a good match for using it that way, and that it is mischaracterized as a vaccination simply because it's intended to stimulate the T1, T3 response, but actually it doesn't address it doesn't sterilize for the virus, so it doesn't prevent infection or transmission.
It doesn't kill the virus. All it does
That's yeah. right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. It does not kill the virus. It attacks the spike protein, supposedly.
Yeah.
Or it
manufactures the spike protein to stimulate the T1-T3 response of your immune system.
And
the immune system, supposedly, is triggered by this spike protein.
What have you heard about that? The fact that the body is basically turns on the 3D printers in the cell to print out the spike protein of the virus.
How can that possibly be good? Can that possibly be a good thing?
Well, it identifies.
Why would you want your body to produce toxin. All the cells? It's absurd. It is absolute absurdity. To anybody who sees this thing happening.
There are doctors who call that an autoimmune disease.
How do you explain the 93% effectiveness that Pfizer is claiming, for example?
The 93 effectiveness, first of all, do you know how they came up with the 93% number? Do you know how that was derived? Well, you should, and everybody should. Yeah. And there's a great book called How to Lie with Statistics. It's very instructive reading.
Okay.
Yes. So they take 1,000 people or two, I think they had 40,000 people, but let's just say 1,000 people, right? And they see who got sick and who didn't get sick. And it turns out that of the people that got sick, 100 people got sick, 90 people were unvaccinated and 10 people were vaccinated. Thus, 90% effectiveness. Do you understand that? Does that even remotely make sense to anybody? And then we throw these numbers around. And we just quote them.
They could have picked a different 1,000 people.
So we don't know what their vitamin C status was. We don't know what their obesity levels were. We don't know what kind of autoimmune or antibodies they had circulating in their bodies anyway. We don't know anything.
So you're saying that as soon as you look at it all closely, it starts to fall apart.
It falls apart. It's vapor. It's vapor.
Okay, well, listen, we got to go to another commercial break, and we got some more callers, Ben. So can you hold on for a few minutes? We'll be right back.
Hope we're all enjoying the ride.
Yeah. Dr. Tavares, Ben Fuchs. Right back after the break. Welcome back to the show. I'm talking to Pharmacist Ben Fuchs. And Ben, last 10 minutes, we got a couple more callers, and I'd like to leave it on a high note, if at all possible. So,
yeah, understand your body. Get a book. Go on Google.
Yeah.
Just figure out how your body works, just the basics of it. Take control of your life. Rest, I call the four elements of physical well-being the fourfold square of health. Mm. Nutriate, respirate, move, and rest. And understand your power, that your ability to control your mind and your emotions and your link to spirituality are extremely powerful ways to leverage good health and quality of life.
Absolutely.
And they're not to be marginalized.
Yeah, and I think you have a lot of this on your website at pharmacistben.com.
Yes.
If you want to know more.
Thank you. And by the way, I'm not a doctor. Sometimes people call me doctor, and I always feel like I have to correct them, but I don't want to correct them.
You're a
pharmacist. I'm a pharmacist, yes.
And a comprehensive generalist, as Bucky Fuller would say.
I like that. I am a generalist.
And a gentleman and a scholar.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So let's take our callers, Mrs.
Okay, Fuchs. We have Ron from Carmel. Hi, Ron. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, Ron. I'm not going to leave you on a high note, though.
Well, you're not the last caller.
Okay,
so
I have the volume control, you know. Give it your best shot.
last week, I listened to Robert Malone in a speech that he gave, and one of the depressing things that he said, as far as I was concerned, is that we'll never be able to reach herd immunity because the people who are infected by the disease are getting the herd immunity part, but the people who are taking the vaccine, they're not going to be part of the herd immunity because they're not actually being exposed to the virus as the ones who are infected.
Yeah, well, how about if we start addressing health from the level of an individual taking responsibility for their health instead of all of us trying to achieve this ridiculous statistic of herd immunity?
Well, there's no problem with that. The other issue that I wanted to bring up was last year, on August 26th, the CDC gave a weekly update by select demographic and geographic characteristics. It was a huge file that basically accounted for the deaths of individuals from the disease. And I downloaded it, and it was a huge spreadsheet. And basically what we've got here is in Table 3 they covered comorbidities, and it showed the types of health conditions and contributing causes mentioned in conjunction with deaths involving COVID-19. And as you go through this thing, it's by age, by state, and by death. And the conclusion was that only 6% of all the deaths listed, and at that time I think there were 400,000, if I'm not mistaken, that I reviewed, because it was huge. But for 6% of the deaths, COVID was the only cause mentioned. For deaths with conditions or causes in addition to COVID, on average there were 2.6 additional conditions or causes of death. They also listed people who were in car accidents, people who had committed suicide, and said that these people had died from COVID, but at least they broke it down. So there was a breakdown back then on August 26th of 2020. Mm-hmm. That was the update that I downloaded. And you may be able to get some more recent information from CDC regarding a breakdown of individuals and the comorbidities that they experienced.
Yeah, that whole comorbidity factor is really interesting.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah, well, good. Well, thanks for the update. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ron.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we have one more caller. Let's go to James in Live Oak. Hi, James.
James.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, Futures. Thanks so much for bringing our favorite pharmacist to the local airwaves.
Sure. Yeah, we love Ben. He does so much good work for our health.
We all do, and we're all enjoying the tide here. Ben, could you give us some of your wisdomic commentary on nanometal particulates, and also the possibility of nasal spray solution with Lugol's?
Are they together? Like nanoparticles? Nano just obviously means very, very small, and nano. Once you make a metal nano,
yep,
you have a completely different quantum substance. The ability of a metal to what makes a metal is its ability to conduct electrons. But once you nanophilize that metal, it creates a different, completely different electronic milieu from a metal at its macroscopic scale. It becomes much more electrically magnetic and much more conductive. Nanoparticles can be very problematic, and they can get in through into the body, into the bloodstream, which is the sacred space, through the skin, through breathing, etc. So nanophilized metals can definitely be an issue, and there's actually some literature that I read that talks about nanophilized metals in this medical intervention that we're discussing. What was your second question, James?
Just before we get to that, and that's what I was referring to. Have you heard that there's possibility of nanoparticles in?
I will be totally. You don't want to inject nanoparticles into your nanometals into your bloodstream. The blood is the sacred space. This is the fundamental issue with this medical intervention: is the blood is the sacred space. Once something is in the blood, it goes everywhere. All disease is cell disease, and all cell disease is preceded by dirty, toxic blood. The blood has been designed from billions of years of evolution, millions of years of evolution, billions from a cellular perspective, to maintain cleanliness. And when you start injecting things, and like I said, it's not just the RNA that's getting injected in the body, it's the capsule, which is made up of a witch's brew of various chemicals that nobody knows about. And I have read about this, the possibility of graphene and nanophilized particles. I don't know about that for sure. But you did ask a second question that I want to address, and I just forgot what it was.
Well, I'm hearing some about from InfoWars and other places that some people are resorting to, say they're in the presence of someone who, you know, is definitely challenged with COVID, that they might whip out a little spray bottle where you can make your own
Lugol's solution. Lugol's is not going to help you with a viral infection. Lugol's will kill organic material, bacteria.
We have one
such.
Minute to the end of the show.
Okay, so it's not going to help you the viral infection. Thank you, James. Good to talk to you.
So, Ben, what preventative measures do you suggest for this virus?
Build your immune system, number one. Avoid the interacting with anything that's going to suppress your immune system, and that's the biggest culprit from a physical perspective is sugar. Processed food doesn't help, and lousy fats. Processed fats are incredibly stressful on the human body, especially on the digestive system, on the intestine. So focus on avoiding toxicity wherever possible. That's number one. Make sure that you're using nutritional supplementation, especially with zinc and vitamin C. selenium, iodine, as James pointed out.
Quercetin.
Quercetin is not really a nutritional supplement in the sense that it's a flavonoid that's found in foods. And the best way to get that is it has a complex. It's a flavonoid complex. Meditate, practice deep breathing, plug into spirituality, focus on mental and emotional health, exercise, breathe. Listen to all these things I'm saying here.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways.
Right.
All right.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's so much to cover in so little time, but
thanks,
appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
You bet. Thanks for being here. This is Pharmacist Ben Fuchs, pharmacistben.com if you want to know more. Thanks again.
This is KSCO.
Thanks, Bobby,
for
being there. Thank you all for listening.
And be well.